Forks and Spoons, Knives and Other Cutlery. I'm your host, Christina.
And I'm Tori.
And this is episode 18 of Cullin' the Shots, the podcast where we reminisce on the good old Twilight days. Yeah! Wow! We are finally back on schedule, and today is the recording for the 18th episode of our podcast. Which, what? We've done this for 18 episodes already? It took us 18 episodes to finish reading the entire, I guess, series, if you don't count Midnight Sun. I can't believe it.
It's been like 10 months or something like that.
That's crazy. Yeah, give or take. I mean, we did read that other short story, the Eclipse novella in between. But I don't think we read anything else apart from that, right? It was just like all of the Twilight books thus far, not including Midnight Sun and then that novella, I think, right?
Yep.
Well, before we finish up what happens at the end of the Breaking Dawn book, we are going to be doing an icebreaker quiz. And the one that we have chosen is titled Only a True Twilight Expert Can Get 6 out of 6 on This Breaking Dawn Quiz, brought to you by our non-sponsor, BuzzFeed.
Thank you, BuzzFeed.
Thank you, BuzzFeed. Tori, do you want to read the first question?
Okay. How did Alice become a vampire? She was bitten by a vampire while in an asylum. Edward bit her. Carlisle bit her after she was nearly beaten to death, or it's never stated.
Is it the first one?
Yeah.
It's the first one.
In the asylum.
Correct. She was bitten by a vampire while in an asylum.
How'd the vampire get into the asylum?
That's why I thought she was kidnapped from the asylum. And then what was the vampire doing there, though? Why did they choose an asylum?
Just roaming the halls. Find a victim.
The vampire's like, you know who the best type of victim is, those in an asylum. And then that's how they chose Alice. Next is, before Jacob imprinted on Renesmee, what was he gonna do? Was he gonna kidnap her? Oh my god. Give her a hug to warm her up, kill her, or bring her to Edward?
Murder.
Judas.
But I love the give her a hug to warm her up.
The answer is to kill her. Correct. Jacob was initially going to kill Renesmee as revenge for Bella dying in labor. And then it's the baby. Okay, from that frame, though, that they chose of Renesmee as a newborn, she doesn't look scary. I know they do some sort of, like, CGI work, because that's not actually what the baby looks like.
Yeah, that baby looks fine. Like, for now.
But for now. As a still image, the baby looks fine. But when you see her more animated in the film, it's like, what is that demon baby?
Okay, what nickname did Jacob give to Renesmee? Nessie, Nessa, Ren, or Esme?
Ah, yes, correct. It was Nessie. Are your images coming up as still images, or are they, like, GIFs? Because
still images.
Because that's such a bad looking frame for Bella.
Her face is all marked up.
It's the scene in the movie where Bella gets mad because Jacob called her Nessie. Anyway, next, what color were Bella's eyes when she became a newborn vampire? Were they gold, red, brown, or blue?
They were red.
Could you imagine if she had blue eyes, though?
I know, I was thinking that. Like, what if newborns had, like, blue
eyes? I feel like that would be kind of scarier than red eyes. I mean, not that blue eyes don't exist. Maybe if they were, like, the blue pigment that's very bright, similar to, I guess, like, the red eyes, I'd be a little like, oh. Like, you know those, are they TikTok? Yeah, the TikToks where, like, people with not natural blue eyes wear those, like, absurdly blue colored contact lenses.
Yeah, those are scary.
And they kind of do look scary. So imagine if the newborn vampires had those bright blue eyes instead of bright red eyes. I almost say that thing again where I click on the wrong answer because I just said it. It's red.
Hello?
Scary.
Okay. Who was Renesmee named after? Bella's aunt, Edward's sisters, Bella and Edward's mothers, or she's not named after anyone? Imagine if she wasn't named after anyone. And that's just the name that she came up with in her own head.
Bella was like, oh, guys, I got the perfect name. You'll never guess where I got it from. Renesmee.
They're mommies.
Renesmee is a combination of Bella and Edward's mother's names, Renee and Esme. Oh, who were the members of the Volturi? Arrow, Caius, Marcus, Sulpicia, and Athenodora.
Who the hell are these people?
Who are these people? Is it Alice, Victoria, and Jasper? Is that Japser? No, not even Jasper. Japser. Am I reading that right?
It does say Japser.
Japser.
Alice, Victoria, and Japser. I love Japser.
Is it Bella, Edward, and Jacob, or is it Arrow, Victoria, and Carlisle? Japser.
Who the fuck is Japser?
Also, how do you say that other name in the previous Athenodora? I think that's how you...
Something. I don't know who the hell those people are, but it's them.
I mean, from process of elimination, I'm gonna guess the first section or first grouping. Who is Sulpicia?
Those are probably the wives. But like, do they ever say their names? I might have missed that.
I don't think so.
I'm assuming that's their wives.
But don't they all have wives? I thought.
I don't know.
Well, it's the first grouping. And I got 6 out of 6, which I'm assuming you did too.
Yep, nice work, spider monkey.
Oh, you really know your vampires and
werewolves.
I can't believe we're total experts.
We know everything there is to know ever.
I mean, we do now.
Clearly, we have a podcast.
Features a screenshot of Bella, Renesmee, Edward, and Jacob from the movie. And yeah, that's the quiz. I feel like all these quizzes that we've done thus far have answered or asked the same questions, but in a different way.
And I feel the same ones still get us. Sometimes we're still like, wait, is this it?
Yeah. Well, and then
I can't remember.
It's always also, what does Jacob name Renesmee after? And I'm like, I don't know. Dracula. Surprise me. Yeah, I mean, this was a very quick quiz. Nothing new. I think it was the previous quiz that we did in the last episode that kind of stumped us, didn't it? The one about the, I think they like had some questions about the werewolves or the wolves. Now that we've finished our quiz, now we can get into initial feelings about finishing the book, because we finally read the last half of book 3, which meant that we finished Breaking Dawn. Yay!
I finally finished reading this book. That never happened before.
I know that I finished reading this book, but like as I read along, I was like, wait, I don't remember this. I don't think I truly remembered the ending of the story until we read it again. And I didn't watch the last movie, so I don't even know what happens in Breaking Dawn Part 2, the movie. So it was fine. I'm glad that we're going to be watching movies for the next few episodes, because I don't want to read anymore. My brain is like, please stop.
It's just mush at this point.
It's just mush. I mean, it was still like a fast read, similar to like the first half of book 3, I think, because just like a lot of things were happening. So I'm like, oh, what happens next? It wasn't like book 2 with Jacob's point of view, where I was just so annoyed that I didn't want to hear him speaking, even if it's reading it.
Yeah, I read through this section super quick. Some of it was a little confusing, just because we meet a lot of new characters and I was getting a lot of them mixed up. It's like kind of hard to keep them straight.
But yeah, so even within like the next few chapters or the last few chapters of this book, there are so many new characters. They even have like an index or a list of the vampires that are introduced who help out the Cullens. But I don't know why I thought that the list was longer. Like in my head, I thought there were even more vampires that joined the Cullen side when need be. But maybe when I was like 13, I thought that was a lot. But in reality, looking at the list now, I'm like, wait a minute, that's not actually that many people. And then Tori didn't finish the book, so I don't know if she had the same thoughts as I did.
Yeah, I didn't remember any of this because I didn't read any of this.
All right, so the first half of book 3 left us with our rapidly growing half-vampire, half-human baby Renesmee. We also have Bella, who is apparently a well-adjusted newborn vampire. And then we also have this impending battle that's supposed to happen between the people siding with the Cullens, and then there's the Volturi. At the end of chapter 28, Alice has a vision that she saw the Volturi arriving in Forks to face the Cullens. And that basically started up a plan to get as many witnesses to stand with the Cullens to prove that Renesmee was not an immortal child in order to reason with the Volturi. The reason of this is because apparently immortal children are forbidden to exist. So in the eyes of the vampire authorities, the Cullens had committed a crime for breaking this rule. And then we get to chapter 29, which is titled Deflection. Alice and Jasper's sudden departure from the family basically left everyone speechless for the rest of that evening. Jacob started asking a whole bunch of questions like, what's happening and why does everyone look so distraught? And Carlisle would be the one who would attempt to explain the situation to him. And then once Jacob knew, he ended up telling Sam the news not long after so that he could kind of prepare the wolves of what's to come. The next morning, though, Alice didn't come back. She was like nowhere to be found. And each member of the family would find themselves questioning, why was Alice taking so long to return? And then slowly that turned into a fear that maybe the Volturi got to her. The Cullens, they ran out of the house out of nowhere to follow Alice's trail, and they leave Jacob and Renesmee behind at the main home. And as the vampires got closer to the Quileute border, they'd find Sam and two other werewolves still in their human form, basically waiting for them. And Sam would tell the group that Alice and Jasper had stopped by the border right after midnight and asked for permission to cross. And then Alice apparently gave Sam a note to give to the Cullens, kind of explaining a little more of what's going on. Also instructed that they keep Jacob out of the loop until that note was delivered. So what does this note say? Basically, Alice's note reveals that she and Jasper didn't want to be followed, and they were reminding them that their main goal right now was to find as many allies as possible. And it's a little vague as to what the note actually means, but Carlisle ended up interpreting it as Alice and Jasper decided to leave the family and they'll be sending help in their absence, basically hoping that the rest of the Cullens would also search for the others to stand by them. When the family heard this, though, they were really upset, but they weren't angry with Alice's decision to leave. They kind of reasoned that, you know, Alice added herself to the family, whereas the other children and Esme, Carlisle was the one who kind of brought them on board. All that being said, though, Bella would notice that the paper that the note was written on was torn from one of the books that she had brought to the house when they moved to the cottage. And no one really made a big deal of it, but it was something that Bella couldn't get off her mind. So when the Cullens started heading back to the main house, they found another trail, but this time it only had Alice's scent, not Jasper. And Edward was like, don't worry about it, it probably just goes to the main house. But again, Bella was like, no, I can't just leave it at that. There's something with this trail. Bella and Edward stay behind to follow the new trail while the rest of the family return to the main house. The new trail would end up leading to the cottage, and then Bella used that opportunity to check her bookshelf to look for this book with the potentially missing page. And as suspected, it was exactly that. So one of the books that Bella had had a page torn off of it. And when she looked inside of the book, she saw that there were a few words written down instructing her to destroy the book. And then below that was an address and an alias of some person. Edward would ask Bella what she found. And Bella simply said that she was right that Alice had written the note from a page in one of her books. And then she threw the book into the fire because it, quote, seemed appropriate. She left out the part where Alice told her to destroy the book, and she also didn't mention that there was an address and a name for Bella to memorize. The two of them return to the main house, and everyone starts preparing to part ways in order to cover more ground in their overall mission. Bella and Edward were instructed to stay at the house with Renesmee and Jacob so that they could explain the situation to all their allies and friends that the rest of them would send over. And then in a few days' time, they would all rendezvous back at the house to prepare for the Volturi's meeting with all the other vampires. The Denali clan were headed to the Cullen house right away, I think like the next day, so they already had to start getting rolling. And then Renesmee could tell that something was up, and she asked her mom where Alice was, and then Bella told her that everything was gonna be okay, even though internally she wasn't sure what the heck was going on. And she told herself that Alice wouldn't have given Bella instructions if there was no possible way to protect Renesmee, even if Bella didn't make it alive at the end of it. And that's how the chapter ends. It's a lot of everyone freaking out, and then Bella finds this note in her book, and then they just kind of wait for the friends of Carlisle and the allies of the Cullens to go to the house.
I don't really have any notes for this chapter, but I was just thinking, like, Bella is convinced, rightfully so, that Alice is leaving, or rather ripped out the page from her book as a clue. But what if it wasn't? What if she just like ripped it out. What if she like hated that book and she just wanted to like rip it before she left for good? Just like, fuck that book.
Well, the thing that got me is that in the book, Stephenie Meyer wrote out what Alice's message was. And I like read that message multiple times and nowhere do I get the impression that Alice is like, I'm leaving, peace out. Every time I read it, it didn't sound like she was leaving the family. It just seems like she was getting a head start on like, you know, working on the plan. But apparently everyone else was like, Alice is leaving. This is horrible. We're gonna die.
Stop. They just like assume she's abandoning them.
Like it doesn't say that. She doesn't say, I'm sorry, I'm leaving you guys. Like she's just like, I don't have time to explain. Make sure you guys do this. But she doesn't say that like, bye guys, I'm not gonna help you. Like
yeah, I'd be sick. I'd be like, you guys have no faith in me that I'd come back. All right.
I mean, that's kind of what happens towards the end when you find out when we get to that part. Yeah, that was the only note that I had. I like kept rereading the note that Alice apparently left. And I'm like, I don't interpret this as her leaving. It just sounds like she's like, I need to get a head start. And I'm going to do that right now. And that's what she did. So now we are at chapter 30, which is titled Irresistible. Bella wasn't really sure what the address was for or who this mysterious J. Jenks was, which is the name that Alice had written in the book. But she knew that Edward had keen enough senses that she couldn't easily sneak around him, even though he couldn't even read her mind. He's just good at knowing when something's up. She didn't even know if the address itself was meant to help Renesmee directly. And Bella wasn't confident that both she and Edward can convince Tanya's clan that Renesmee was harmless. So basically, Bella didn't know what the heck was going on. She didn't trust herself in any of the things that she was apparently supposed to prepare for. Even though she's a newborn vampire, she didn't even know if she'd be able to fight physically if she needed to. Before Tanya's group arrived at the Cullen house the next morning, Bella, Edward, and Jacob would discuss some of the Volturi's personnel, what the vampire's special powers were, and basically how Tanya's family would allow a former Volturi member to join their clan. And as it got closer to that greeting time, Renesmee would project her feelings to Bella and basically started feeling upset, thinking that, you know, she was the reason or the cause of this big problem for the family. Everyone told her that, like, it's not her fault, and they were trying to assure her that that was the fact. And Bella also says, like, yeah, you're different, but that doesn't mean you're inherently bad. And then Edward would open the door just as the Denali clan would arrive, and they'd have all their happy greetings, but then it would very quickly turn serious when Tanya would ask where Carlisle was. Edward would respond that Carlisle had to leave. He said that in Carlisle's place, he needed them to listen openly of a grave situation that the whole family was in, and then he asks for them to basically keep an open mind. So they go on to explain the story and they present Renesmee. The visiting vampires were like, oh my god, how could you guys have done this, when they see Renesmee. But their assumptions of this apparent immortal child are expected because Tanya and her sisters directly had experienced the horrors of what happens when you get caught with an immortal child. Showing physical proof, though, that Renesmee was conceived by a human and not purely created from a vampire's venomous bite, they slowly get Tanya's family to at least listen a little bit more of the explanation. And then eventually Renesmee would show them herself what her specialty is by her projected memories. And one by one, everyone would like soften up to her and basically understand where she's coming from. So now all of them are on the same page from the Denali clan that Renesmee is not an immortal child. The imminent danger still remained because the Volturi were coming after the Cullens because they thought that Renesmee was one of the forbidden ones. One of the vampires, Tanya, would ask how they came to that conclusion. And that's when the Cullens basically said that Irina was the cause of why the Volturi were coming to Forks. And then, shocked by that revelation, Tanya assured them that they would remain to fight with the Cullens, even if that wasn't the intention of the Alliance. And then things seemed to be hopeful for a few moments before Bella would think and remember that Alice had left them. And then at the end of the chapter, they just are no longer hopeful of good things happening. And that's what happens.
This wasn't in my notes. I just thought of it in my brain. But what if Bella just went into a full-blown depression when Alice left, like she did with Edward?
Oh God, I thought about that. I did.
Like her spinning
that
in a chair for 4 months. Like
Bella, there ain't time. You got less than a month left before the Volturi come in.
One of the only like notes I have is that one of the vampires, Elazar, I think his name is, makes a comment that abstaining from human blood makes vampires more civilized and it therefore lets them form true bonds of love. And I was just like, I don't think that's how it works. I don't think that consuming human blood and animal blood is going to dictate
your ability to love.
I don't think that's how that works. I don't know. I've never been a vampire, so I don't know. But it just doesn't sound right to me.
Me being like, I've never been in love, so I don't know if that's true.
But don't the other vampires have partners too?
Do they I know.
Them? Like, why are they there?
The note that I had is that there's a part that I started laughing because, oh yeah, it's literally in the beginning of the book. Basically, I started laughing because Bella and Edward were busy having sex all night. And then the next morning they go, wait, we have a child to take care of. I mean, granted, obviously they're trying to spend as much time together because they don't think they have much time left to exist. But I just thought it was funny. There's another instance of them spending their time together and then they just go, wait, we have a baby to take care of.
It like cracks me up because it's really like Bella can't think of two things at once. She can either think about Renesmee and she's like, all I want to do is save my daughter. Or she's like, all I want to do is get dick down by my vampire husband. She literally cannot want two things at once. She has to focus on one of them.
You gotta multitask, Bella. You can.
She's a vampire. She's like so talented apparently, and you're telling me she can't like think about more than one thing at a time. It's like she like lays Renesmee down, like a little switch goes off, she's like, oh, horny time.
She's like, wait,
and then, like, the sun comes back up and she's like, baby time.
It's either baby time or make baby time. That's
honestly,
those are the two differences between the switches that Bella apparently has.
Yeah, Bella claims that Renesmee is her whole world, yet that she doesn't remember her a lot of the time.
A lot of the time, they like
wait, the child.
Oh no, hold on, the baby. All right. So in chapter 31, which is called Talented, Tanya would ask, what is the werewolf's part in this whole endeavor? And Jacob would answer saying that if the Cullens' spoken reasoning doesn't work, then they're going to stop in to stop the Volturi. So Tanya and Elazar commented that Renesmee is special in her own right because she has talented parents. And then Elazar specifically refers to Bella's power as a shield, which caught Edward off guard because he didn't really see it that way. They kind of dig a little deeper into who of the Volturi's powers wouldn't be able to reach Bella and then who might be able to. Bella is able to protect herself from anything that might mentally manipulate her, but the same can't be said for any physical attacks. Tanya's sister Kate would ask if Bella is able to project her shield away from her to cover others, but they didn't really have a definitive answer for that since Bella didn't even know that that was something that she could do. And then Edward and Elazar would begin their own internal discussions, focusing on the Volturi's true purpose of sending the leaders, the guards, and even the wives to Forks. And somehow they concluded that it must be punishment in order to gain power, which is something that Volturi had done previously many, many, many years ago. The Cullens have been blessed to have a lot of members in their clan that possess special powers, and Edward and Bella could both recall Arrow's offer to have Alice and Edward join the Volturi when they last visited Volterra, which was only like a few months ago. At this point, when you think about it in the timeline, the reason that so many gifted vampires were part of the Volturi was because of similar punishments like the one that's about to happen to the Cullens. The gifted ones were usually presented with the offer of continued existence in exchange of their allegiance to the Volturi, while everyone else who didn't really have a special power ended up getting killed off. So as this conversation continued, it became more evident that this meeting between the Cullens and the Volturi would turn into a physical battle because the Volturi wanted to retrieve the gifted vampires at all costs. Edward would attempt to calm the Denali clan's worries of only being witnesses when a car parked into the Cullens' driveway. And at first, Bella thought that it was Charlie, but Edward assured her that it was actually Peter and Charlotte, vampires that Alice and Jasper had sent their way. And then they had to basically go through this whole explanation process once more with some new guests. And that's how the chapter ends.
I just want to know, if vampire powers are so rare, why is it that almost every vampire has a special power? Mm-hmm. At least one vampire in every clan, except for the like Romanian vampires, I guess. Every other coven or whatever you want to call them has at least one talented person.
Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like one out of four.
Yeah, that's not rare.
Is a talented vampire or a skilled vampire. But, like, that's not, those are pretty high odds to be talented then, if that's the case.
Yeah, are there just a bunch of, like, random vampires running around that, like, don't do anything and we just don't know about them?
So if you're saying there are talented vampires, are you also implying that there are not talented vampires?
That would be me. I would just be one of the vampires literally doing nothing.
Well, we said this before, how, like, I didn't quite understand what they meant by a talented vampire, because, like, vampires by default seem to have qualities that are, like, superhuman, whether it's, like, their, according to Bella, their ability to see an additional color that doesn't exist, or they're super fast, or they're, like, very, yeah. Could you imagine a vampire who was bad at, like, sucking the blood of a human? Like, that's what they have to do to survive, and they're really bad.
That would be my luck. I'd be like, come on. But, like, I don't know if I'd rather be, like, have no gifts at all or just have, like, a really crappy gift. Like, one of the gifts of somebody is to be able to tell what other people's gifts are.
That's Elazar's gift.
Yeah.
His gift is to know what other vampires can do.
That's so dumb. I'd be so pissed.
As long as I can get employed doing this, that's all I care about. Which is basically what he did with the Volturi. So Elazar was the vampire who used to work with the Volturi, but no longer does, and now is part of the Denali clan. My favorite one is still, I think it's Siobhan. She can manifest things and it'll happen.
But she doesn't believe that she can do it. She, like, talks about it like it's a joke.
I know.
Like, really willed that one into existence, didn't I, Carlisle? Like, girl.
I don't know if it really happens for, like, physical objects, but it seems like if you want a situation to happen, it's going to happen as long as you manifest it. And I'm like, damn, she's got so much power. She's probably more powerful than the Volturi at this point, if you think about it. So the note that I had was they talk about this vampire who's a member of the Volturi Guard, whose name is Chelsea. And basically she can manipulate emotional bonds between others. I guess the example that they provided is, like, Chelsea will usually be used to manipulate whoever's trying to oppose the Volturi to make them no longer have those allies or, like, bonds. And then I said, like, imagine if you could do that in real life. And the situation that I came up with was, like, maybe bullying wouldn't exist, because, like, with Chelsea's power, you could make everyone get along. There would be no reason to hate a person or, like, not be bonded with them. And I was like, oh, that's a cool power.
That's iconic. Chelsea, why aren't you using your powers for good?
Could you imagine it? Chelsea could create world peace. We could actually do it with Chelsea's power.
Chelsea needs to become a teacher, a grade school teacher.
She could stop the bullying directly. Or, like, if there was ever a person who, like, just felt like they never belonged, Chelsea could stop that. She could make them feel like they belonged. Wouldn't that be such a great power? I'm like, wow, we could save some lives, man. We could really save some lives.
I love alternate universe Chelsea.
I think she would do really good work. So now we're at chapter 32, which is called Company. Basically, more and more of Carlisle's friends would join the group at the Cullen House in order to learn about Renesmee. The longer that they stayed, the more difficult that it was to keep their hunger at bay. These vampires, unlike the Cullens and the Denali clan, they didn't live that vampire vegetarian lifestyle. It was requested that they at least keep their hunting outside of the Forks and La Push area. Jacob didn't really take the growing presence of the vampires well, but he couldn't leave Renesmee's side for too long. And in return, the vampires didn't really care for Jacob at all. He kind of seemed, like, invisible to him. I think the way that Bella explains it is as, like, not quite a human, but also not quite food either. Which I was like, that's kind of a weird way to explain it. The rest of Jacob's pack were sent to patrol the forest with Sam's pack, so they didn't have to approach the Cullen House at all. And then most of the visiting vampires basically tolerated Renesmee's existence, except for the people of the Egyptian clan. The leader of the group, whose name is, I think you pronounce it Amun, was really wary of Renesmee, and he even told his partner Kebi from not touching her at all as well. It also turns out that Amun has a member of his clan that has special powers that he's been also trying to keep a secret from the Volturi as well, which is this vampire who's named Benjamin. And unlike his creator, though, Benjamin was not afraid of Renesmee and was able to accept her like the other visiting vampires. I think for Benjamin's power, he can manipulate the physical elements, So that's kind of different, whereas everyone else is more of like a mental power. Carlisle, Esme, Rosalie, and Emmett would return to the house a week after they left, and they were surprised to find even more guests that were sent over by Alice and Jasper without any further notice of basically where the two of them have gone. While Renesmee was preoccupied with another one of the vampire's special powers, Bella took this opportunity to start working on her own ability to physically fend for herself. Every time she'd ask Edward to help her out, Edward started having a difficult time trying to train her because he couldn't visually think of ways to kill her. Like, for Edward, that was just like too much for him to handle. So when that didn't work out, Bella would seek out the other vampires to spar with, including Emmett. When Bella wasn't fighting or taking care of Renesmee, she would practice on her special shielding skill. And for the moment, she wasn't really making much progress. And her teacher, who was Kate, had suspected that she wasn't improving because she had no motivation. And then one of the sessions that Kate was working with Bella, she had suggested that Renesmee assisted in training instead of Edward so that Bella would have a more emotional reason to strengthen her shield. Kate's plan was to use Renesmee as a trigger so that Bella would be able to activate her shield more successfully, in the same way that anger would become the catalyst for that shielding power. So there's a vampire named Zafrina from the Amazon clan who has this power to basically project images and can also create blindness in the people that she's able to put her powers on, which is actually kind of similar to what Renesmee does. The images that Zafrina can create are kind of imaginary, whereas Renesmee's is her own memories. So they had Zafrina use her special power in order to see how far Bella's shield could protect others. Because Bella got angry that they were using Renesmee, she was able to kind of trigger her ability to project that shield a lot further. And then out of nowhere, there were two vampires that appeared at the Cullen house that no one invited. And they were the two from Romania, who were apparently really powerful in the vampire world at one point until the Votori took over their empire. And after Carlisle explained the situation with Renesmee, those vampires were like, "We don't really care. We just want to see somebody take down the Volturi," and that's pretty much how that chapter goes. So it's like Bella trying to work on her own powers and her own physical strength, and then like we learn more about some of the other visiting vampires and their special powers, and then the Romanian vampires show up, and that's it.
I think it's hilarious that the two Romanian vampires are only there because they're petty as fuck. Yeah. And they're mad that the Volturi overthrew them like 1500 years ago. They're just still pissed about it. They're petty as fuck. They're like there for the fight. They could care less about this baby. They're just like, just want to see them go down. Hilarious.
I don't even think they let Renesmee touch them either. They're like, they said, "I don't want to touch this demon baby. I just want to see somebody take down the Volturi."
They're literally like, "We're just here for the fight, little child. We don't care about you.
We don't care about you at all."
The only other thing I have is I hate the way that Stephenie Meyer describes people that are clearly not what she considers the ideal beauty standard. Like, Siobhan is supposed to be like a bigger woman and she calls her huge body. Like, that's just an uncomfy way to say it. She claims all of the Egyptian vampires look the same and they all look like they could be siblings, which is exactly what she said about the werewolves too, that mm-hmm. they all look like they could be siblings and they all look the same. Yeah. And she calls the Amazon vampires wild
ones. Yeah.
She says they're the most uncivilized vampires she's ever met. But you don't know them.
Yeah.
Like, just because they have an accent. And she's like, uncivilized black people. I'm scared. Yep. Like, what? Girl. If she was writing all of the people like this, whatever. But then she goes to, like, the Denalis. And she's like, they're the most beautiful people I've ever seen. And even the Volturi is like, Jane is beautiful. And I'm like, bitch, come on. Just so weird. She's literally like, and then in walks a group of brown people. They all look exactly the same. I cannot tell them apart. Like, what?
They are the skin color of russet potatoes. That's basically what it ends up sounding like.
Yeah, she always like compares them to like potatoes.
Mm-hmm. The final note I had for this chapter was that, so they kind of explain how Bella tries to like spread out her shield. It almost sounds like she's trying to get her face to look like she's gonna poop in order to like get the shield to project further. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
It sounds like she's like scrunching up her physical body in order for her to project her shield.
Yeah, I'm just like imagining her like all curled up like Mm-hmm. The only other thing I have is, like, you mentioned the vampire index before, mm-hmm. but Jacob specific says, like, if these vampires don't stop coming, I'm going to need a vampire index. And then it has an asterisk, like, to the page where the vampire index is. I just thought that was hilarious. I'm like, thank you, because I needed that.
I'm telling you, I thought that index was supposed to be a lot longer. Yeah, I thought there was supposed to be more to it. For some reason, I thought it was going to be like a tree, similar to when you do like an ancestry tree. But no, it's literally just like, here is the area where these vampires, whether it's originate from or like where their home base is. And then here are the vampires that are involved.
I wish it said like what their powers were on the index.
I'm like, I know, it just says who has what power, but it doesn't say what exactly that power is. So chapter 33. Is called Forgery, and because of all the visiting vampires at the Cullen residence, it was not a good idea to have Charlie stop by to spend time with Renesmee for that week. Instead, Bella would tell Charlie that she was going to bring her to him, and she used that opportunity to search for this mysterious contact that Alice had left her clues for. Bella, of course, didn't tell Edward of her additional plans. She also didn't tell Jacob, but he still tagged along anyway to send Renesmee off to Charlie's for that day. It was close to Christmas time, so Bella would end up telling her dad that she was going to leave Renesmee with him so that she could get some holiday shopping done. The address that Alice had given Bella didn't exist online, so Bella had to memorize at least the potential area that this address could be in. She decided to drive there first. In her research, though, she also found a backup address for the name Jay Jenks. But when Bella would get to her first destination based off of the address that Alice had given her, it was in a poorly developed neighborhood, one that you'd typically envision where illegal activities would take place or something like that. And it's definitely not a place where a young woman in a nice car would usually be found hanging around if she were on her own. Bella would also say that if she were still human, she kind of would have feared for her own personal safety, but because she's a vampire, she doesn't have to worry about that anymore. And I was like, ah, what's that like? Not worrying about... Nice. I know, I'm like, wow, I would love to take a walk at night, but I can't do that. So that address would lead her to the services of a forger, hence the title of this chapter, who went by the alias Jay Jenks. Forger can produce identification documents. Bella would then speculate that Alice is trying to get Bella to have papers made for Renesmee and also Jacob so that they could run away if things go south with the Volturi. This forger had a connection to Jasper, but he surprisingly had never met Jasper's partner, Alice. And so when Bella appeared, he actually thought that Bella was Alice. But nope, Bella's Bella. Alice is Alice. Yeah, their initial face-to-face meeting was a little strange. She ended up having to go to the main office, not the ghetto, which is where Bella drove to in the first place. Bella would tell Jay what she needed for Renesmee and Jacob. And then after exchanging a large sum of cash that Bella had stashed in her bag from the Cullens, she paid for the service in full and then told Jenks that she'd pay him a bonus once she had the documents in her possession. They agreed to meet so that Bella could get the documents in a week, and then the chapter ends. And I'm like, damn, Bella's carrying that cash in her bag. What?
Okay, but the name she puts on the fake ID for Jacob is Jacob Wolf. Like, she couldn't have thought of anything better than that. It's giving very much George Glass energy.
George. Like, George Tropicana.
Like, you couldn't have thought of anything else. He said Jacob Wolf.
I think it's funny that Jasper was the one who always dealt with Jenks or Jay, and so Jay never knew who Alice was. But also that Alice would give Bella the ghetto address. For Jay, and not like the fancy main office where with a more legal appearance. Yeah, so Bella talks about how the Cullens have a lot of money, and she specifically says that they have precisely enough to, quote, keep a small country afloat for a decade. What the heck? That's a lot of money.
Can you imagine?
I can't. That's why my brain was blown.
That's like ridiculous.
She like talks about how they have so many spend accounts in many, many places, and she compares it to how Charlie has so many fishing hooks. And
I don't think that's comparable.
Charlie must really love fishing then if he has a lot of fishing hooks. The other note that I had for this chapter is that Bella agrees to meet Jay at a restaurant. I'm not gonna say what the name is, but I was like, that's so funny. I was like, I wonder if like 13-year-old Christina was like, oh my god, that's my name.
You probably were. You probably fangirled over it.
But how come I don't remember it? Like, I read that and I felt like that was the first time I'd ever seen that part. I also thought I was having not a deja vu moment, but a moment where I thought my brain just produced this information out of nowhere. So like maybe in reality it said a different name, but for some reason my brain was like, ah, that's what that word says. But no, that's my name.
I don't like that it's referred to as ghetto from Bella's point of view. She's like, this bad neighborhood is so ghetto. I'm like, girl, please. It like just rubs me the wrong way. The language used in this book is just so like icky to me.
So in chapter 34, which is called Declared, Bella would drive back to the Cullen house with the baby. Renesmee was fast asleep, and then Jacob decided to stay at Charlie's, so Bella didn't have to keep up the lie of what she'd done for the day while Renesmee was with Charlie on the car ride home. When she got back to the main house, Edward was playing piano, which was something that he had stopped doing after Alice left. She would show Edward the Christmas present that she bought for Renesmee, which was a locket necklace. I was also like, I can't believe Bella had enough time to get the fake documents ordered and also buy a necklace for Renesmee.
She's talented.
She's got speed on her side as a vampire. So Edward suggested that they take Renesmee back to the cottage to sleep, but Bella wanted to train with Emmett a little bit more. Edward didn't let her do that though, so he stopped her from fighting Emmett, which made Bella a little upset because she knew that she'd wasted the day running her special errands, but she didn't want to fight Edward on that decision. She figured that instead of focusing on the negatives, she should spend the rest of the day thinking about the good things, like that chance that Renesmee has to survive thanks to Alice's help. Christmas would roll around and they'd spend the holiday at Charlie's house, and on the way back to the main Cullen house, Bella couldn't help but think about exactly when she would have to give those papers and information to Jacob, as well as like what letter she'd have to write to who in order to basically have her final goodbyes if things went south. When they arrived at the house, there seemed to be an altercation and one of the nomad vampires had left, citing that he didn't want to be a part of the mess that was to come. Amun was another one of the vampires who was ready to pack up and leave, for he was accusing Carlisle of trying to steal half of his clan members, which obviously wasn't the case. And then the rest of the vampires agreed that they'd remain to stand with the Cullens, and if it ends up that this would turn into a physical fight, they would fight with them as well. And then this chapter ends with Bella panicking over the potential holes in her shield and then her never-ending worries that she's not going to be strong enough to save Renesmee or any of them from the Volturi's vicious attacks. And that's what happens.
The only note that I have for this chapter is it's stated that Renesmee is wearing a bracelet that is like the Quileute version of a promise ring. And I feel like we're getting it thrown in our face every second that we can. That this child is like betrothed to this grown ass man. I like hate it.
Yeah, they do.
She's like a toddler walking around with a promise ring to this grown ass dude. Like, and Bella's like, oh, it doesn't bother me. Why doesn't that bother you? Like, what a promise ring entails, it's a romantic thing. It's not like, I promise to be your buddy. Like,
that's not the purpose.
And I feel like this is like one of the first times, they do it a couple times, that they like really push the like, Renesmee is going to be with a grown ass man.
Yeah,
like
they push it even more so towards the very end of the of the book, which we'll get to once we reach those chapters. I think the one note that I had for this was that I wasn't sure how the heck Bella was able to hide her like secret mission from not only Edward, Jacob I can understand because he's kind of dumb, but I don't know how she managed to hide it from Renesmee, because Renesmee is a very, very observant person or baby. I don't know. I feel like she'd be able to easily see her like mom's facial expressions and like at some point ask her mom through her projected memories, or even just asking her in person, like, what's wrong? What are you doing? Renesmee didn't catch on either. And I'm like, how? Because she's a vampire doesn't mean that she's good at hiding her emotions. She's really bad.
Yeah, it's because it's convenient to the plot.
Yeah, that's a big theme that we're finding. Things just happening because they gotta happen.
There's like something else that just like happens and I'm like so sick about it, but we'll get to it whenever we get to it.
All right, chapter 35. It's called Deadline. And a week had passed since Bella got those documents ordered. So she had to leave the main house again in order to meet with Jay to get the fakes. And when they met, Jay had disclosed that he'd been working with Jasper for the past 20 years and that whoever was working with Jasper before then had worked with him for 15 years. So that's a pretty long time. Jay would comment on how Jasper hadn't changed a bit in all of that time. And Bella was like, "You don't say." Oh, well, that's so strange. People tend to say that a lot about Jasper. Jay also would ask Bella what the purpose of the documents were, even though that's typically not something that like a person would disclose or ask between a client, especially in this type of work. But Bella assured him that they weren't making these documents because they were trying to kidnap the little girl from her father. She was like, "No, no, this is my daughter and my husband's daughter. And we're just making sure that we have a safety measuring place in case something happens to Bella and Edward." I don't know. I just thought it was funny that the guy was like, "You guys aren't going to kidnap this child, are you? Because this man in the photo does not look like her dad." Yeah, you're right.
He wanted the tea.
I mean, even after Bella explained it, that didn't mean that Jay was like, "Oh, okay, I'm fine." Like, he was still like, "Yeah, seems pretty sketchy, but I'm not going to ask more questions," even though he already asked too much. Bella would quickly drive back home after she got the papers, and she went directly into Alice's room. She like found one of Alice's bags that wouldn't look odd for Renesmee to carry, and she threw the documents, the letters that she'd written, as well as money into that bag, and then wrote the words "Rio de Janeiro" on a paper so that Jacob would know exactly where to run when he had to with Renesmee. Time would pass, and then Edward and Carlisle would go to the baseball clearing, which was coincidentally where the battle with Victoria's newborns had taken place, and it's also the area that Alice saw the Volturi going to in her vision. And that whole situation reminded Bella of when she, Edward, and Jacob had to camp out less than a year ago for a previous conflict, but this time it was Bella, Jacob, and Renesmee who would have to camp out right before the big meeting. And basically, while they were camping, Bella would tell Renesmee of this backup plan and asked her to keep it a secret from Jacob until it was finally time. Everyone would get into their formations in the clearing, and they stared off into the distance, waiting for the Volturi to arrive. That's how the chapter ends.
Only been 7 months since they like camped out in the clearing before. Literally 7 months. Yep. This timeline is wild.
I know. I would like lose my head. I mean, obviously, I guess it makes sense as to why Bella is just like never okay, but like there's no time to process anything.
No. 7 months and all of this has happened. That's crazy.
And more. Like, I don't know how this bitch can get through so many near-death experiences and not be like not lose her mind mentally. Like, I would have lost my mind a long time ago. My note. So Bella gifted Renesmee a locket for Christmas. And this is like really nothing to do with the story, but I was like, I always wondered how people got photographs into lockets because they're so tiny. And I'm like, how did you get a picture that tiny?
I know. Where do you get a picture that small?
Where do you get a picture that small? And like lockets used to be so popular a long, long time ago. And I'm like, how did they get pictures that small? Like, were the lockets a lot bigger than I'm thinking in my head? I don't think so. They're still pretty small.
The only other thing I have is before Bella meets with Jay again at the restaurant, she's like standing by the fire warming her hands so they're like not as shocking when he shakes her hand. But why did she do this? She already shook his hand during their first meeting. It's not like he like now thinks you're some like warm-blooded creature weirdo. Like, why did you
it's also winter, so it's okay if your hands feel cold.
Yeah, like why did she do that?
I don't know. She's like over preparing for something that she didn't have to prepare.
I know. She's like standing by the fire warming her hands. Like, is that okay for a vampire to do?
She's also warming her hands in the fire and being like, what does it feel like to burn?
I know. Like, I wonder what it would feel like if I just stuck my hand in this fire and started burning. She needs therapy. Even after she's like a vampire, she needs therapy.
She needs a vampire therapist. The last note that I had was that in this chapter, they talk about the huge russet potato. And by that, I mean Jacob as a wolf.
The huge russet potato. Why is it the only thing she can compare something brown to? A potato.
I don't know.
A russet potato.
But yeah, it comes back in this chapter. And I was like, good. So chapter 36 is called Bloodlust, and it wouldn't be long until the Volturi ancients, the guards, and their witnesses would make their grand entrance into the clearing. So Edward spoke to Carlisle, saying that Alistair, the nomad vampire who left the Cullen House a few days prior, had suspected that the reason the Volturi had such a large audience with them is actually because their main goal was them trying to get more vampires to join the Volturi. This meant that the Volturi had actually no intention of waiting to listen to the Cullen family's case. They just wanted a reason to tear the group apart, which is awesome. Great. Love to hear that. Apparently, the Volturi didn't act immediately once they got to the clearing because they saw how many people were on the side of the opposition, and they're like, wait, we actually do have to think about this. We can't just like attack. The Cullens had more fighting numbers on their side, and the Volturi didn't count the witnesses who were there as people, like manpower, if there was a battle. Their only purpose for being at the clearing was to observe. Arrow would call on Carlisle, first greeting him and then asking, how could you break the rules? And then Carlisle would assure him that there was no ill intent and that no rules were broken. They then called on Irina to confirm if the child that they all see in the clearing was the same as the one that she initially saw in the forest, claiming to be an immortal child. And then Arrow asks for Edward to approach him. But Bella didn't want Edward to cross over to meet Arrow. He couldn't avoid it. On Edward's way to crossing over to the Volturi side, Bella would catch a glance at Jane, which made her really mad, and this triggered Bella to project her shield to cover Edward. In this instance, Bella would realize that Edward needed to be free of her shield so that Arrow could very clearly see his thoughts, and so she would like retract her shield of protection from Edward. And then, a little shocked to see the truth through Edward's mind and memories, Arrow would ask if he can see Renesmee. They agree to have everyone meet in the middle. Renesmee would project her thoughts to Arrow, and this made him even more curious. The wolves would suddenly become an area of interest because of Renesmee's experiences. Arrow would ask if it were possible for them to have the wolves act as guard dogs. Arrow, delighted in all his new findings, would ask for a moment to speak with Caius and Marcus. So the two groups would split up once more, which ends the chapter.
I know I'm not supposed to like Arrow, but I love Arrow so much. So funny. Anytime Arrow is in the books, he's so funny and like just so giddy, and I think it's hilarious. He's like weirdly nice, and he like tries to listen and stuff, but like he's the villain, so I love him. He's
like the more understanding of the Volturi, and the Volturi as the whole are like the bad guys.
And also the guy who plays Arrow in the movies is so good that anytime I read these, I just hear his voice and that weird little giggle that he does. It just tickles me. Maybe that's why I like Arrow so much, because I like the guy that plays him in the movies. I think he's hilarious. The only other one I have is that they state that because more vampires are coming into the area, there's been an influx of new werewolves being created. And I just want to know, like, if the number of vampires in the area correlates to the number of werewolves in the area, what happens when all of these vampires leave? Do the werewolves not become werewolves anymore? Is there just a copious, overwhelming amount of, like, wolves running around now? Like, I don't understand. What's the math situation? But yeah, I don't get that. Like, how does that correlate? What happens when they leave?
Okay, chapter 37. It's called Contrivances, which I had to look up exactly how to pronounce that word. So Arrow begins speaking to his groupmates, basically telling them that everything that he's seen through Edward's memories are truth, and that even the Cullen's witnesses prove that Renesmee is a being that has a beating heart who lives and grows. Bella notices that she has like even more control of her shield. She even has this power to like pull and extend these invisible threads, which is how she explains what her shield is, that would allow her to protect those on the Cullen side. She would also realize that her shield still has holes in the way that if any of the Volturi got under this protective umbrella, then she really couldn't protect anyone but herself. Caius begins to say something regarding the wolves, and suddenly he aims his words to use the wolves' existence as the big problem to punish the Cullen, since Renesmee isn't the problem anymore in this situation. Except Edward reasons that, one, it's the middle of the day, so these are not the children of the moon. And two, these are wolves that merely shapeshift into the form of wolves during the course of their existence, which is different than the children of the moon, who are werewolves. Caius would then call on Irina to ask her questions about her allegations against the Cullen family. And then Arrow would ask the guard to take care of her, which means that they killed her. Proof that she's finally taken full responsibility of her actions. And this angers Tanya and Kate because the Volturi just killed their sister, even though she didn't break any rules. The Cullens and their allies attempt to calm the two sisters down, but it's proving to be very difficult to do so. Arrow calls upon some of the Cullens' witnesses to ask them questions about Renesmee. So Amun, Siobhan, and Garrett all answer that Renesmee is a living and gifted person. It's clear that Arrow's attempting to like pry more into a piece that Siobhan has mentioned, where she claims that Renesmee is not dangerous. And then this opens up a whole new discussion where Garrett would take on the stance to accuse the Volturi of approaching the whole confrontation in a biased manner, stating that the Volturi isn't seeking justice, they only want power, and basically tries to like start a revolution with the other nomad vampires. More of the Cullen's witnesses speak of their purpose to just observe. They all share the same stance that the Cullens didn't break the rules. And then the Volturi, not budging from their original contentions, ask for another moment to counsel. And then the Cullens realize that this is probably going to turn into a fight after all. And at the end of the chapter, everyone tries to come to terms with that reality and they're like all sad. But yeah, that's how that goes.
Irina got what she deserved. She shouldn't have been a snitch.
Yeah, that bitch.
Honestly,
who literally did this because of Laurent. For a man, fuck that.
No,
fuck that.
Let's see. Okay, this is also something really weird that I was like, why the fuck did he say that? When they're all like saying goodbye, Edward looks to Jacob and he's like, goodbye Jacob, my brother.
Yes,
my son.
Yes.
What the fuck?
I was like, wait, what?
This like makes me very uncomfortable. It's very like,
The note that I had was that I forgot that the wolves aren't werewolves. Like, I know we sometimes refer to them as such, but they're not. Like, when you go back to the origin story of the Quileute wolves, they just took on the form of a wolf because that's who, like, one of the very first shapeshifters, like, that's what they became when they were angered after they met the vampire and stuff like that.
Imagine if they weren't wolves. They like changed into like snails or something.
I was thinking bunnies. I'm like, what are things that exist in the forest or the woods? I'm like, bunnies.
Yeah, I love that Caius is like afraid of wolves because he got attacked by one sometime. And he's just been like trying to eradicate it.
Yep, that's his grudge against the werewolves because he got attacked by one.
He's like, fuck werewolves. They came after me one time, so I'm gonna kill every single one of them.
All right, so we are coming down to our final two chapters of this story. Chapter 38 is called Power, and a member of the Volturi Guard would attempt to get past Bella's shield. So many more attacks would be hurled over in order to penetrate the barrier that Bella created. But luckily, Bella was able to hold her ground. Benjamin, with his powers of manipulating the physical elements, would create a gorge, which basically cut through the earth and then physically separated this like triangular formation of Arrow, Caius, and Marcus. The remaining vampires on the Cullen side began calling off which member of the Volturi they wanted to take care of. Arrow would say once more they were going to take a vote, and Marcus voted that Renesmee was not an immediate danger. Caius was saying that she is. Arrow remained with the deciding answer, but before Arrow could announce his ruling, Edward would have like a really sudden change in expression, and he would call out to Arrow asking if there was a way to prove that Renesmee continued to grow, if she could be able to stay concealed from the human world and was not a danger to revealing the secrecy of the vampire's existence, then would they all be able to leave in peace? And then when Arrow said yes, Edward would call out for Alice. Oh, Alice is back. And reveal that Alice had been searching for the final witnesses in order to prove the Cullens' innocent case. Alice appears And everyone's like, oh my God, Alice, we missed you. And she has with her the third member of the Amazon clan, as well as another vampire whose name was Halen. And finally, a man whose name was Nawel. And Halen would speak of the story that her human sister, whose name was Pyre, had given birth to Nawel, who was fathered by a vampire named Yoham, which made Nawel half human and half vampire. After giving birth to Nawel, Pyre did not survive because her baby was too strong, and her dying wish that she told her sister was for Halen to take care of Nawel in her absence. When Halen tried to pick up Nawel, he bit her, and the venomous bite is what turned Halen into a vampire. The two of them would continue living together, and Nawel would learn that his vampire father, Yoham, had created more vampire human hybrid children with other human women, but all the mothers would die either after or before childbirth, and the remaining children ended up being daughters, but they did not possess venom like Nawel had. And apparently this was more than enough reason for Arrow to make his vote, and he would decide that there was no danger and no threat to exposing the vampire world. And then literally just like that, the Volturi left and all the remaining vampires were like, what? And then they started celebrating.
This climax was like so anticlimactic.
I know. Literally, I was like, what do you mean that it just stopped because Alice came back with a half vampire, half human? Like, I feel like whatever the main problem was, wasn't really solved.
Like, I guess Stephanie Meyer just didn't want like her characters to have to die. I don't know. There was like no fight. There was nothing.
Like, why would you have all these people there and there's no fight? Like,
it's literally like gets big group of people together for other big group to come. We talk for a little bit. We put a shield over ourselves and then they leave. And that's it.
And that's it. But kind of going back to your point where you're like, yes, this was added in there so that they could just solve the problem. Like, it's, yeah, great. They put the solution right there out of nowhere.
I know. I was thinking that. Like, of course Alice finds another half-human, half-vampire. Mm-hmm. Like, of course she does. She had to.
Of course she was able to do it in time. Like, how it's was Alice going to
on the nose.
It? How did Alice know that, I mean, maybe she saw it in her vision. I don't know. How did she know that she needed one specific vampire from the Amazon clan in order to find this half vampire, half human person that existed? We are at our final chapter of Breaking Dawn, which is chapter 39, and it's called The Happily Ever After. Everyone celebrates because they didn't lose any members on their side, which is cool. And many of the visiting vampires would very, very quickly return to their homelands. Edward would fill in the blanks of what happened as told through like the mind reading that he was doing to anyone who was still at the Cullen house. And basically a big part of their success was thanks to Bella's shield and then also the presence of the wolves. Both of those aspects were things that the Volturi didn't foresee. Even if a fight did break out, they deducted that lives would have been lost, but the Volturi knew that they would lose a lot of their people as well, and that was too great of a risk for them to actually want to engage in a fight. Bella would go on to ask Alice why she would go to such great lengths to leave the family, but as we would find out, Alice didn't actually leave the family, and she would explain that the only reason that the plan worked is because she needed to leave without explaining, and like Alice had her own side of the plan that she needed to complete. Jacob would end up finally going home so that he could rest because there was no more immediate danger to protect Renesmee. And Bella also took this time to ask Jasper why Jay Jenks was so afraid of him. And Jasper would say that from his experiences, working with those type of relationships turn out the best if there's fear motivating it instead of just monetary gains. Bella and Edward would take Renesmee back to their cottage, and on their walk over, they would talk about Nawel and his intense staring. At first, Bella would thought it was weird, but Edward was like, no, Nawel's just really impressed that there's a family that exists where the human vampire baby didn't kill the mother and the vampire father existed with the family without ill intentions. Bella has one more surprise for Edward as well. Apparently she'd been practicing on forcing her shield away from her so that she could allow Edward to see into her mind. And for a brief moment, she was able to do that. And Edward became so enamored by Bella's abilities and everything about her. They talked about how Bella needs more practice, but Edward assured her that they had forever, and they kissed and stuff, and that's it. That's the end of the series. everything was solved because Alice had to save the freaking day.
Of course, Edward can hear Bella now. Like, of course, the one thing that's been, like, an issue throughout the entire series is solved on the last two pages. He just found a loophole. So now she can finally show him her thoughts. No, it doesn't. My only other note is that it's so weird that both of Renesmee's parents are so obsessed with her future sex life. They, like, both mentioned that, like, according to Nawell, she'll be a fully matured adult in like six and a half years.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 5 years or something like that. Like, Edward was like, oh, I guess Jacob will have some competition. Like, what? That's a toddler now. Like, that's a baby. Mm-hmm. Like, they just seem so intent on, like, discussing the fact that people, like, are excited for their baby to become of quote-unquote legal age.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. And she'll be six. She won't even be an adult. She'll be six.
She'll be six.
Do you have any notes for this chapter?
I do. So the first thing, did anyone get any weird chemistry vibe between Carlisle and Siobhan? Because I did. Their little banter about Siobhan's manifestation power, I was like, this seems flirty.
Esme's in the corner like,
And I was like wondering, because a lot of the people who were invited to act as witnesses on the Cullen side were friends of Carlisle. They were like friends of Carlisle, except for the few that were sent over by Alice and Jasper, who had like connections to Alice and Jasper. In my brain, I was like, oh, is there like a headcanon where Carlisle and Siobhan were like close, but then Carlisle would meet Esme and then like, I guess Siobhan met her partner Liam, and then that's how that turned out.
Actually, they're all just swingers.
I mean, they could. What's stopping them? They're alive forever. They could do whatever they want.
Probably so, get yeah. born after a while. They're like, let's head up the Irish real quick.
Oh my god. It's just like, I guess Bella and Edward got their happily ever after.
Yeah, it was like just really anticlimactic at the ending because it feels like it wasn't meant to be like good or thrilling or entertaining. It was just supposed to like satisfy your need for a happy ending for these mm-hmm. characters, but like that's not what we want.
But was it even a happy ending? Like Edward even says that this isn't over. Like the Volturi may have, you know, walked back now, but that doesn't mean they're gonna not attempt to do this again in the future.
Why is Alice not the leader of this coven? Why is it Carlisle? Honestly, what does Carlisle do? It needs to be Alice. She's saving people's asses time after time. Honestly, the most interesting part of this entire thing was that, like, J-Jenks thing. I would, like, read an entire thing about the backstories of the illegal things that man does. Amazing. Yeah. But yeah, I need, like, the whole backstory. How did they get, you know, in touch with the Cullens? How did Jasper find the guy before Jenks? Mm-hmm. What is the deal? I want to know all of the tea about this illegal documents.
I also am still very interested in the vampire scientist dad who keeps fathering all these half vampire, half human babies with other women.
I love that he thinks he's like building like a super race.
And so I also think that he considers himself a scientist. Dude, all you're doing is knocking up these human women. What the fuck?
Honestly, and then killing them with
you ain't no scientist. I still think that part is really interesting. I like read more into Johan and like that mini storyline. And it says that like Johan sent one of the half vampire sisters that survived to like retrieve Nawell. And then that's how Nawell would learn that he has sisters and like what their father has been doing all this time.
Yeah, that whole like Volturi shit was not like interesting at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I got questions and I have no answers. No answers, just frustration. I guess that's it. The next thing we get to do is watch the movie for the next episode.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah, thank you for listening to this week's episode. Remember to tune in every other Monday as we fall right back into our Twilight obsession like it's 2008 again.
You can find Call in the Shots on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your usual podcasting platforms.
Come sit with us next time at lunch for more of our sparkly personalities.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.